It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's been 20 years since a Florida Democrat won a governor's race. With the swing to the left, they feel this could finally be their year.
After last night, the biggest battleground state in the nation now has a proxy Donald Trump versus Bernie Sanders showdown for governor this November.
We have shown the rest of the country that we can be the David in the situation where there's a Goliath.
In a shocking come-from-behind victory, progressive Democrat Andrew Gillum, the far-outspent Tallahassee mayor, defeated a big primary field, including former Congresswoman Gwen Graham, daughter of former Governor and Senator Bob Graham, who led in the polls by 7 points.
We've got to get out there and bring all the people that we can to our side. We've got to do that, y'all, not by being hateful.
Elect Andrew Gillum.
Gillum won the endorsement of Vermont Socialist Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders, who said that Gillum was leading the political revolution. Like Sanders, Gillum wants Medicare for all.
All right, so that's the first part of Phil Keating's report on what's going on in Florida. And it is kind of the race that everybody's looking to. You may have seen, probably, on the news last night that Ron DeSantis said made a very careless statement using a very careless word. And, of course, all hell broke loose. And I'm going to let Phil continue with his report because he touches on it. Then we're going to come back to it. Let's listen.
To the next governor of the great state of Florida.
The Republican primary winner, Trump's choice, Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis, a 3-term congressman, Iraq veteran, and unabashed defender of the entire Trump agenda. Tuesday night, DeSantis acknowledged how much Trump's endorsement played in his 20-point landslide victory over establishment conservative and agriculture commissioner Adam Putnam, who had led the polls before Trump weighed in.
I did have support from someone in Washington. If you walk down Pennsylvania Avenue, he lives in the White House.
Yet day one of this critical showdown began with controversy when DeSantis said this on Fox News. Gillum is hoping to become Florida's first black governor in history.
The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state.
Gillum gave us this interpretation.
In the handbook of Donald Trump, they no longer do whistle calls. They're now using full bullhorns.
DeSantis' campaign later issued a statement denying he was making a racist comment, simply contradicting socialism with capitalism. One thing that could still dog the Gillum campaign, an ongoing FBI investigation into Tallahassee City Hall. To date, Gillum's not been implicated. They told Fox Today he has nothing to worry about.
All right, so that was Phil Keating, and that was just a touch on the uproar over Ron DeSantis' comment. Now, a couple of things I want to say about that race. The way the media is characterizing it is that Ron DeSantis only won because President Trump endorsed him. And I would certainly say that was a huge help. But could I just say that I watched that debate between Ron DeSantis and Adam Putnam. And really, Ron DeSantis just won hands down. It was bam, bam, bam. You know, Adam just was kind of a regular politician. He was very politically correct. He was very measured. We know what that's like, right? I don't have to describe that. It's the way politicians speak, because certainly Putnam has been in the arena for a long time. Ron DeSantis was much more plain-spoken, like the president on the stage with the other candidates. And he knew the policy. He's, after all, he's a Harvard grad. He was an attorney in the JAG Corps in the Navy. So he's a very smart guy, and he understands the issues. And yes, he has defended Trump very vocally on television, and I think people have seen that. And he's not defending him mindlessly. He's defending him with real arguments. So Ron DeSantis is a very smart guy on his own, and I kind of think if you ask me in that debate before this election ever took place, that's probably the reason why he began to rise in the polls, and then the president's endorsement just threw him over the line, and he beat Adam Putnam by a great deal. All right, so Ron DeSantis then, as you heard Phil Keating allude to, made a statement on Fox talking about his opponent, who is the most liberal of the Bernie Sanders backed, the most left of any candidate that has won so far in any of these elections. He was the mayor of Tallahassee. And so Ron DeSantis is already landing some punches. He said he has said earlier that Andrew Gillum wants to make Venezuela, make Florida into Venezuela based on his policies in Tallahassee. So that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of rhetoric that he's been saying. And so this was the little bit, an excerpt of his moment on Fox News so that you can understand why the uproar. Here it is, clip 7.
So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida. So I'm going to fight for what I believe in, because I think I'm the guy who can really lead Florida in a good direction.
All right, so the use of the word monkey is immediately taken by Andrew Gillum to be a dog whistle for some racist term. So that's how it starts. And then last night, Chuck Todd had Michael Steele on. Michael's the former head of the RNC. I've known Michael for years. I've considered him a friend. I know that he was deeply wounded by some of the leadership in the Republican Party. And since that time, he has been a vocal opponent, really, of the president and his policies. But he's a gentleman. I like Michael. And yet this is how the conversation went last night. I want you to hear it.
All right, I'm going to talk about the DeSantis monkey comment here in a minute. Why didn't he get the benefit of the doubt, Michael?
Why didn't DeSantis get the benefit of the doubt?
The assumption was that he didn't misspeak, that it was 100% a racial dog whistle. Why? Is it because he's connected to Trump? He didn't get the benefit of the doubt for many people, including Fox News.
It's because he's connected to Trump. It's because it's how white folks talk about black men who are successful.
Let's hear the whole thing, just so people can hear it. I think it's important. We have a longer version of the bite that gets at exactly what you're saying here. Here it is.
You know, he is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, you know, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida. So I'm going to fight for what I believe in, because I think I'm the guy who can really lead Florida in a good direction.
I heard that he's articulate. He performs well. You know, he's checking off those boxes. Why do you have to describe him that way? You know,
what makes him articulate?
Yeah, what makes him articulate? Chuck, you are an articulate man. I mean, and you know, you perform well. Mm-hmm. Now, that says one thing, but when you...
Doesn't happen to a lot of white candidates.
Happen to a lot of white candidates. But here's the rub. Who uses the term monkey things up? I mean, to be honest, I know about a monkey wrench. I heard of don't monkey around. But I've never heard that term used that.
So you're not giving the benefit of the doubt.
No, I'm not. Because that came from that space that says... To that audience that he was talking to, that Fox audience, which is why Fox's response is so important.
It's fascinating.
That they pushed back on that.
Yeah.
Was that this is in the land of Trump. Yeah, I took the Trump train to stupid land, and I'm going in, and here we are.
This is what you get with Trump.
Okay, so all of that on Ron DeSantis' comment, we don't want to monkey this up. And I was thinking about this a lot. First of all, let me address this other thing they said in that soundbite, that this is the way white folks talk about successful black ones. Really? If I had Michael here in the studio, I'd say, really? Honestly, I'm a white folk, and I've never heard. I don't hear that. I don't hear that. Are you walking among white folk who are talking that way? I doubt it. You're assuming. You're projecting. And also, the white candidates are not referred to as articulate. Are you kidding me? I'll give you two examples. I'll tell you one who's been described as very articulate is Ted Cruz. Incredibly, off the charts articulate. And I'll tell you a white politician who is the opposite. And that would be Mayor Richard Daley from Chicago. That doesn't mean anything to most of you, but trust me, you can't get a decent soundbite after out of Mayor Daley. You couldn't when he was mayor because he can't talk. Joe Biden is kind of funny, too. He says all kinds of really, really ridiculous things. No one, so he is inarticulate. So, of course, it applies to white people and white men, as though we had to think of these things in terms of color, which brings me to just what I want to share with you this morning. Don't you long for a day when every single word that we used is not picked at and observed and heard through the lens of racism on either side, where motives are attributed just with using a word? I remember someone, I meant to look this up and I didn't, but there was a public figure, this happened a few years ago, who used the word niggardly in a commentary or on the, and that's a word. It has a meaning. It has nothing to do with people's race. It is an actual term. Look it up in the dictionary. And he had to come out and apologize for using a word that mean, I don't even know what it means right offhand, but I think it means like dastardly, or it's certainly not a compliment, but it is a word in the dictionary. So, you know, when I use, certainly in growing up where I did, we use the word monkey around, don't monkey with that. Don't, and I have to say, silly me, I actually was thinking of the animal. The animal, you know, you've seen like some lazy monkeys in the zoo, but once they get out, like in India where I've been, they're wild and they do all kinds of mischief. They create chaos. I'm thinking of monkeys. I'm not thinking, I mean, I'm white, so because I say that term, now why does it have to mean that? I think it may, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, it might have been something that was used commonly in a racist white culture, but it's kind of out of our veins. I think our kids wouldn't think about that. They'd think about the animals, and most of their parents wouldn't think about it either. You know, when I say that, again, just to emphasize, if I say something like that using the word monkey, the last thing on my mind is a racial slur. I'm not thinking about that. You know, when I was on radio in Chicago, I've told you before, I had so many black friends and listeners, and we talked about really tough issues. We never ran away from anything. And I honestly was never, I never tried, how can I say this? You always have to be careful when God has given you a microphone about what you say and how you say it. So that I'm not disqualifying that meter that's always on me just to represent him faithfully. But I never put a measure on my words when I talk to my black friends. Look there, I do not think in racist terms. And I don't think that the people that I'm talking to who happen to be black have to be handled with kid gloves, and so therefore I can't say what I think. You know, I talk to them as equals. I did on the radio, and I'll just tell you one time, I stuck my foot in my mouth on more than one occasion in other ways. It wasn't just that. But one of the worst times for me, and I think it's probably a great example of when this thing really kind of reared its ugly head, one of my producers through the years was a former football player at Notre Dame. He was about 6'6", great big guy, no hair, just an earring in one ear, and he was black. I loved him. And one time when we were talking on the air, I said to him something like, "Boy, you better do whatever." And of course, he flipped out, not on the air, but afterwards. And what I had to think about, I said, try to explain to him, is that I called my son that all the time. I called him little boy. And when I was actually referring to Steve, it was an endearing term. And I had to, you know, we had to work through that. I was actually the godmother to his son. He knew that I didn't have anything racial in mind. But you see how out of control this gets? And I think out of respect for each other, we shouldn't have to. I don't want my black friends to control their language either. To say what you think. Let's get it out on the table and talk about it in respectful ways. Let's respect each other enough to speak the truth. And not jump to conclusions and attribute notions that are not there. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. Since Hurricane Katrina, 8 Days of Hope has loved and served people in need all over the country. In fact, we've had about 35,000 volunteers travel with us to love and serve people in need. In March, we were in Houston to help out Hurricane Harvey survivors rebuild their homes after the flooding that happened there last fall. Hundreds of thousands of families needed help then, and still today the need is there. We're looking for volunteers to go back with us. 8 Days of Hope 16 will be happening in Southeast Houston October 13th through October 20th. You can come for 3 days or all 8 days. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. If you can carry drywall, make sandwiches, pick up people from the airport, or deliver materials to the job site, we'd love for you to consider coming with us to Southeast Houston in October. 8 Days of Hope 16, October 13th to October 20th. Come and help us and be the hands and feet of Jesus.
Learn more and sign up to be a part of 8 Days of Hope 16 in Houston, Texas at 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
In 2017, I wrote in my book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, that the bigger story from that election cycle was the rise of socialism. A good many pundits dismissed my concerns, but as we now know, those concerns have been validated. Socialist candidates across the nation are winning primaries in the Democrat Party. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York and in Florida, Andrew Gillum, who promises a billion-dollar tax increase and single-payer health care. It's no surprise a recent Gallup poll found a majority of Democrats have a more positive image of socialism than capitalism. Republicans would be foolish to ignore the warning signs. Socialism is on the rise, fueled by an education system turning American young people against capitalism. The lines have been drawn for Election Day, folks. It's Donald Trump versus Bernie Sanders. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I was just reading an update on the plans for John McCain today. Of course, there will be a funeral at North Phoenix Baptist Church today, or memorial service. I'm not sure what they're terming it. Then he'll be lying in state in the Capitol through Sunday. There'll be a service there, where President Obama and President George W. Bush and John McCain's daughter Meghan will deliver remarks, and Senator Lindsey Graham will offer one of several scripture readings, and that'll be at the National Cathedral on Saturday. The president, or John McCain, has asked, the pallbearers, I think this is an interesting point. He's asked a really interesting group of people to be his pallbearers. Six of them, I think, are former senators that he worked with. And then the others will be people like former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, James Mattis is going to be a pallbearer at the Naval Academy service on Sunday. And then Warren Beatty, the actor from Hollywood, of course, will be a pallbearer. I'm not sure. There are a lot of pallbearers for a lot of different different events. He's also asked a former Russian dissident to be a pallbearer, and some are saying that's another ding to President Trump. President Trump was not invited to the funeral. John McCain planned everything before he passed away. And we just heard yesterday, this is another thing, I didn't read this to you, but Sarah Palin had the most gracious remarks on the passing of John McCain. You may remember that when John McCain, well, I remember this, I'll tell you what I remember. I was there the night that John McCain nominated Sarah Palin. I was in the room in the stadium. I think it was Minnesota, I think, is where we were. It was the Republican National Convention. And I was sitting way up high, and Sarah Palin came out on the stage, and I'm telling you, it was electric. It was electric everywhere she went. And she, I would argue that Sarah Palin is the person that pulled. It was her persona and her commitment and her passion to conservative values that pulled McCain along as much as he was pulled along. Because he'd run before. He was not a person, in spite of what they're saying, he wasn't a person to inspire people to vote for him, not on a massive scale. And I also remember one of his first rallies in Wisconsin after he was nominated and Sarah won the nomination next to him. There was, first of all, let me repeat, in the room when she was nominated, I can't even imagine, I can't describe to you the electricity in that room. That was a jolt to his campaign like you can't even imagine. And the first rally they did was in Wisconsin, and I was back in Chicago then and watching from on television, and just suddenly, whereas just not that many people had been showing up with him on the campaign trail, people just poured out to this rally. And already, immediately, John McCain began tapping down any kind of negative conversations about what was going to be President Senator Obama at the time. He forbade his campaign people from using his middle name, Hussein. He talked about what a great American Senator Obama was, and it was just a strange thing. And so I remember someone from the audience in that Wisconsin rally was echoing what many of us were saying, was because we knew how far left the policies of Barack Obama was and what was ahead if he was elected. And so this gentleman from the audience said to John McCain, "Fight for us! Fight! Senator McCain, fight for us." And he just laughed. Senator McCain laughed at him. Oh yeah. I'm just describing to you how that was. And so as Sarah Palin went out on the campaign trail with him, she was the one who was the backbone of that campaign. And of course, then they put her in some very precarious places. They set her up with an interview with Katie Couric, in which Katie made her look like a fool. And Sarah had been a very successful governor in Alaska, was very popular for good reason, lots of integrity. You may remember later that they actually went into every single one of Sarah Palin's email over the course of several years and made it seem as though something was, there was going to be something onerous in there, and they found nothing. They found nothing. That's the kind of person Sarah Palin was. But she was destroyed by the media and by Saturday Night Live characterization of her. "I see Russia from my house." She never said that. It was a joke, and yet it was attributed to her. They made her a caricature, and the campaign really did nothing to defend her. All right, I say all that kind of background to say that then John McCain was defeated, and Sarah, of course, went on to be sort of the titular head of the Tea Party movement, which was wonderful. It was a powerful time. And I would argue that many of you who are active in politics became active during that time, and we're very grateful for the leadership that Sarah Palin gave to that before they managed to destroy her for no real reason. And then John McCain came out with his book, I think just last year, called A Restless Wave, in which he said he regretted choosing Sarah Palin as his running mate instead of Joe Lieberman from Connecticut, Joe who's vociferously pro-choice. That's who John McCain wanted. But he was thought, well, I better have a woman, and she needs to be more conservative than I am. And so in his book, he says he regrets it, which was very hurtful, I'm sure, to Sarah Palin. All right, so on the death of John McCain, what did Sarah do? This is what she wrote. "Today we've lost an American original. Senator John McCain was a maverick and a fighter, never afraid to stand for his beliefs. John never took the easy path in life, and through sacrifice and suffering, he inspired others to serve something greater than self." And then she wrote, "John McCain was my friend. I will remember the good times. My family and I send prayers for Cindy and the McCain family." And she signs it Sarah Palin and family. All right, so now the news today is that Sarah Palin is not invited to the funeral. She can't come. I'm just saying. And this, of course, I told you that John McCain planned his funeral way long ago. He announced he wanted Barack Obama to speak. He wanted George W. Bush, who's, you know, at odds with President Trump. He wanted him to speak. So those are the two people speaking. Sarah Palin is not invited. The president, of course, is not invited. And so there's this great push and pressure on others to be gracious in the death of John McCain. But no pressure on the McCain family or acolytes to be as magnanimous as they're asking others to be. Although I have to say, I'm grateful for Sarah once again demonstrating to us Christ-like, grace-filled responses. And I would not suggest anyone respond in any other way, but I'm just pointing out to the differences in people here. And so when I hear, you know, all the accolades for Mr. McCain, I have a problem with that because that's not the way I remember him. And even in his death, it seems like there's a lot of harshness coming from him and a lot of vindictiveness. And so I think that's sad. This is from Mark on Facebook. He says, Sandy, although I agree with you about McCain, he was a sitting senator and a POW. So petty indifferences should be set aside during death. Petty differences, I think he means. Okay, Mark, we talked about that yesterday. I said, well, what is the response? You know, do you become dishonest about a person? You certainly don't want to rail against them. I mean, I don't believe as Christian. I'm speaking as a Christian because that is my guide. But to be forced into dishonesty, that's a whole another issue. But Jerry kind of puts it pretty well. He says, in fact, he puts it very well. When you think of it like, when you think of the way the left feels about John McCain and his service, his military service in Vietnam, he said it's kind of like getting a participation trophy. Then you will begin to make sense of how the left feels about John McCain. Think about it. And I did think about it, and I think it's true. It's like because a person, let's just follow this, you know, because a person gets cancer in our culture, they are suddenly a hero. You're not a hero because you get cancer. You are a hero because of how you, if you respond with courage to what faces you. You aren't a hero because you are captured or even because you're tortured. You are a hero because of how you responded. And that was my big issue with John McCain. He took what I think is not necessarily an admirable record there. He was captured and tortured, and heaven knows we are grateful for his service and we are sympathetic and stand in awe of someone who's had to endure that. But he did not endure it necessarily as well as others who stood firm. He ended up recording propaganda videos for the enemy, among other things. And so I just don't think you wear that as a badge of honor. I don't think he needed to live in shame the rest of his life, but it was unseemly to me. To have him paint himself as a war hero and happily do that. Okay, so I know that's controversial, but I'm just saying that I believe is the truth. And so what Jerry is saying here, that just because you are captured and tortured does not make you a hero, but it is, in the culture's eyes, just participating in that, having that happen to you makes you a hero. Having you get cancer makes you a hero. Having you die makes you suddenly a hero. I'm not talking about John McCain specifically. I'm talking about all kinds of people, famous people, terrible people who have died, are suddenly lifted to some sort of a godlike status just because they have died. And that's not a qualification. It's the character of the person that we look to. All right, so I know I've said enough to get the phones going, so I'm just going to open them up. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. We can talk about any of those things. I want to also mention a couple of other things in regard to the Texas race, and that reminds me, I got an email from a listener. Hang on, let me see if I can find it. Basically, she says that she's from Texas, and she has not been seeing, she's around the Fort Hood area. She's not seeing signs for Ted Cruz. She's seeing more signs for Beto O'Rourke, and she's concerned about that. Here it is. This is from Julia. And she says she's a military family, and I think that's what she says. Maybe that's another listener. But anyway, she's near Fort Hood, and she said, I keep seeing signs pop up for Beto. I have friends in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they report the same thing. Please, will you add this to your dialogue? Well, all right, I will report that, and I will say that in that race, things are really heating up. In fact, Ted Cruz has been trying to get Beto O'Rourke, of course, to enter into a series of debates, and so far Beto hasn't wanted to do that. The other thing is now the Republican Party of Texas is releasing all like mug shots of Beto O'Rourke when he's been arrested before, and then they've released another picture of him in a punk rock band. So it's just interesting. And the other thing, of course, they have video of him more recently in a public place, I guess a campaign stop, responding to football players kneeling during the playing of the national anthem, saying, I can think of nothing more American than kneeling during the anthem. So it's an interesting race. We'll see how that affects it. I think we really are seeing sort of a plethora of candidates who are on the Democratic side, who are running, you know, as though they're conservatives. They're dressed up and they're, you know, that's not always true, because some of them are just outright, you know, they don't dress up and they don't look. But most of the cases, they are all cleaned up, and that happens with Republican candidates, too. I've mentioned Martha McSally in Arizona, same thing. They've dressed her nicely, and they make these candidates try to appear to be something they're not, and they try to hide their real viewpoints. And I think Beto O'Rourke is one of those. He cleans up well. He's articulate. Did you hear me? I said that, Ms. Michael Steele. Beto O'Rourke is articulate. So call me a racist. Go figure. Anyway, so that's how the race is shaping up in Texas. I want to tell you one more thing before we go to the phone lines. I mentioned to you yesterday that in the in Virginia 7, which is David Bratt's district, it was Erin Cantor's at one point. Dave Bratt has an opponent named Abigail Spanberger, and from all reports, she's giving him a run for her money, for his money. And of course, there's no hiding the fact that the Washington Republican establishment would love to see Dave Bratt defeated, because they really resent him beating Erin Cantor, and also Dave is just a stalwart, uncompromising conservative. So now, Congressional Leadership Fund has uncovered some documents that show that Abigail Spanberger worked at the Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia. I think she taught English there. Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia. And I have to tell you that there is a real history on that academy. It's an Islamist academy funded by the Saudi government, at least it was. It was called Terror High, after 12 United States senators and a federal commission wanted to shut it down. I'm going to do a whole show on this, but not today. But I wanted to let you know that so Abigail is suing the Congressional Leadership Fund for printing this. And the people that are representing her are Perkins Coie, the law agency, the law firm that paid for the Russian dossier on behalf of Hillary Clinton and the DNC, while not calling it a campaign, nothing related to the campaign. The Perkins Coie is at the center of so much of the bad stuff that's happened in Washington. So now they're funding Abigail Spanberger. So I just wanted to mention that. And again, I'm going to do a whole show, or at least a segment on that, so that you can know more about that school and about her involvement in it. Okay, I've chatted. I want to go to the phone lines. It's 888-589-8840. Oh, my goodness. I guess I won't go to the phones yet. Probably shouldn't. You wouldn't like that. So just be patient. We'll be back right after this break, and I'll go right to them then, I promise. Okay, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Lord hates the shedding of innocent blood. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The July 2018 issue of Oprah Winfrey's namesake magazine, Oprah, features a glowing profile of Amelia Bono, the woman who coined the Shout Your Abortion hashtag and began a campaign to promote the benefits of in utero baby murder and implicitly silence women who say they were hurt by their own abortion. The O magazine has millions of readers all over the world, and that number certainly includes many who profess to be Christ followers. Next time you see an O magazine, remember its founder and creator is an official supporter of the Shout Your Abortion movement.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Bible is clear that sexual energy is designed by God to be channeled exclusively into the relationship between a husband and a wife in marriage. Further, Paul says in Romans 1 that sex outside of marriage leads to the dishonoring, or literally the devaluing, of the human body. There is something destructive to the human body in indiscriminate sexual activity. Without even knowing what they were doing, the Centers for Disease Control has again confirmed the truth of Scripture. The CDC sent out an alarming release this week indicating that sexually transmitted diseases are at all-time highs, and one of them may become completely resistant to antibiotics soon. Bottom line, when God said in 1 Thessalonians 4 that it is His will that we abstain from sexual immorality, He meant it.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Meet Roxy, nurse director for the preborn clinic in Southern California.
I have this lady, and she came and she was very scared. Boyfriend didn't want her to have a baby, and she said, I don't want this baby. We provided an ultrasound. She was laying on a table, and there it was. It was a small baby. Then she heard the heartbeat. She heard the heartbeat and she said, well, you know, it's alive. After hearing the heartbeat, she made a decision that she was going to keep her baby. She also made a decision that day to recommit herself to Jesus.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump was right to scotch a further mission to North Korea last week by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. That's so not simply because its dictator, whom the president famously ridiculed as Little Rocket Man, is transparently reneging on whatever commitment he made to denuclearize his regime. Further signs of accommodation by the United States are also unwarranted because of two other developments that are enabling and reinforcing Kim's bad behavior. First, as part of Communist China's escalating Cold War against us, Beijing is easing sanctions and otherwise facilitating its North Korean puppet's double game. No less worrying is the increasingly pro-North complexion and behavior of the South Korean government. America's leading expert on such matters, Lawrence Peck, warns that we ignore at our peril Kim Jong-un's influence operation there and here aimed at perpetuating his regime and its aggressive, hegemonistic ambitions. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
So, Sandy Rios back with you. By the way, just because I don't say it often enough, I really love hearing from you. From email, which is sandy@afr.net, to Facebook posts, to all kinds of things. I don't respond personally, hardly ever, just because I just don't have the time. I don't have the bandwidth in my life to do it. But I do read them, and I try to respond as best I can. And I can't, of course, always read them on the air, but I try. I just want to give you a smattering. This is from Susanna. She said, I grew up in Chicago. Remember listening to you when you broadcast there. And it's great to reconnect. We're a military family now, live in Memphis. Is that sweet or what? Thank you, Susan. And this is from Bob. He said, thankful for what you do, miss your show at times, but go online to hear old shows. The problem with our republic is fake news and not hearing the truth. And that's Bob. And you know that you can listen to shows later. You can listen to them on Facebook, or you can go to the podcast so that you don't have to miss anything if you are so committed to listening. And this is, okay, that's an, oh, this is just nice. I just want to read this one, then I'll go to the phones. Ellen says, thank you. She's bragging on me, so I'm reading a boastful email to you, or post. Thank you for being brave and humble enough to remain on the air during all of your dental work, like when I was missing my teeth last week. She said, your conservative voice is priceless in this politically electric period. By the way, you sounded good today. Thank you, Ellen. My own husband said that. He said, you sound like yourself, which I almost am. I don't have my permanent, okay, had a biking accident, lost my teeth. That's the quick story. And I have temporary teeth, so I hope to even sound better when I get the real ones back. So, but that's really sweet, Ellen. I appreciate it. Okay, to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Texas. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Sandy. Thank you for having me on your program. I am calling from Texas, Dallas, Texas area.
Okay.
And I was too concerned. Therefore, I went online on Facebook, and I found many sites for Ted Cruz, Ted Cruz Revolution, #StopBeto, you know, on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I joined a group, many groups. They have posts there saying, we're going to have a block walk day next Saturday, or what day. They'll post that information. I have gone to those. They post where Ted Cruz will be speaking. I have attended one of those, and Ted Cruz has stated that he's getting the same concern with people asking him about why there aren't so many Ted Cruz signs. He stated at his get-together in Carroll, Texas, that the reason is because the left really went to get his seat. They want to turn Texas blue. Therefore, Beto has money coming from California. He's got it from Chicago. He's got millions of dollars backing him. Therefore, Ted has to be careful of where he spends his money. He has chosen, he and his campaign, people have chosen to hit the road and get with the signs and get those stronger at the as we get closer to Election Day. And many people have said, too, what people will do is go around and steal signs. But you can purchase those. Go to tedcruz.org. He's got a place there where you can tedcruz/shop. And you can go purchase your signs. I have some coming in the mail. They're $10 each, the same amount of, that they are charging for Beto signs. So please, and his name is Robert O'Rourke. Please get that out. His name is not Beto, as is if he's Hispanic. He is Irish-American, fourth generation. So please get that out there.
Okay, I didn't know that. I did not know that he was not. I thought he was half Hispanic, but he's not?
No, he's fourth generation Irish-American. Abraham Hamilton III, the day after the election, commented on it. He's got a hilarious clip on this. And
okay.
He goes on to say, Abraham said, it's like, that's me. That's like me using the name Bobby. Just trying to get votes. He's trying to pander the kids, the people that are in Hispanic. So
well, Abraham's from Texas, so he would. Yeah, Abraham's from Texas, so he would know that. So, all right, Chris, listen. That's
it. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate your information. I'm sure people in Texas will too. So, thank you very much. Let's go to Kevin in Texas. Today's our Texas day. Hey, Kevin.
How are you, Sandy?
And I'm
thank
good.
You for making your comments today. I want to comment on your on how you're addressing. You know, when people die, that somehow you're supposed to bless off of them, even if they led a life that had consistent evil. And I was just thinking of a comparison to Solomon in the Bible. And Solomon, I think, even had a better record than John McCain, because when you look at the start of his life, and the especially when you read his prayer at the opening of the temple, and you think, what a great man, what a wonderful man. But then you go through the rest of his life, and you realize he led Israel into idolatry and into sin. And I was thinking, what if you were a priest back then who were sitting there trying to caution Solomon out of the temple and say, Solomon, don't do this. Get back to where your beginning was and all that. And Solomon just continued to persist. And then somebody says, well, you know, we're going to go mourn Solomon and his death. And if you were sitting there saying, you know, I can say good things about how he started his reign, but I can't say good things about how he finished. And they would say, well, you know, you're not invited.
You know, like
Kevin,
that.
Actually, you go ahead.
I was just thinking that, and how you referenced Sarah Palin, she was very gracious, trying to, you know, treat him nicely, and I appreciate her for doing that. But I also appreciate you for being willing to say, you know, just like maybe a priest back in that time, I can't say Solomon was a good king. He led Israel into sin. And that was just my thoughts on a comparison there.
Kevin, that's really actually a very good observation. And what it made my mind go to was the Bible itself, as it records, let's just say the various kings, it describes them very clearly. He was a good king. He did this. He was a bad, you know, he arraigned, and they kind of sum it up in phrases. They don't gloss over the record of the king. And maybe that is our example right there. I asked the question yesterday, what is the biblical pattern for this? I don't think it is that you don't destroy a person, mock. I don't think you mock them or anything like that, but you do not lie about who they were. I just don't think that does a service to anyone. And certainly the Bible doesn't do that. And that is our standard, Kevin. And you use the example of Solomon, but you're really onto something here. And I appreciate that. Let's go to Kathy in North Carolina. Good morning, Kathy.
Hello. I appreciate your program. You are one of my heroes.
Thanks, Kathy.
And anyway, I was thinking about this morning. I was so glad you opened the phone lines. I was thinking about the comment that was made by DeSantos, monkeying it up. And I was thinking, you know, why they're so upset is he didn't use the left's favorite word. If he would have said the F word instead of monkey, then there would be no comment from the left. But because he used the word monkey and they're trying to play the race card, then they got their way again.
That's actually a very good point too, Kathy. You're right. They don't care about the most vulgar of terms, but whatever they can use, that's what they're trying to do. Whatever it takes to achieve their objective, that's what they do. So they leap on this kind of thing. Now the truth is that Ron DeSantis is going to have to be careful. The truth is that President Trump has to be at least careful, somewhat careful. And all of us do. There's nothing wrong with taking care with your speech. But really, it's over the line when every single word you use is dissected and all the worst possible motives are attributed to you to get political gain. I think that we got to stop that. So that's a very good point, too, Kathy. Thank you. Let's go to Bobby in Texas. Good morning, Bobby.
Hey, good morning. I want to tell you, I am a 49er. We're the last graduating class of the 40s. Nobody will ever be 69 again. I realized that at 65. I said, Lord, why couldn't I be 1950? But now, what a wonderful thing to be the last graduating class of the 40s, right?
Yes, sir.
The thing I wanted to say was McCain. Rush said that McCain once said, my base is the media. How awesome is that? No, it's not. What a traitor, right? Now, the other thing was I lost respect for Karl Rove. And I went to his to see what he was talking to, you know. I like to hear different people. And he said that he compared Stalin to Trump. How crazy is that?
Karl Rove can. Wait a minute. Karl Rove compared Stalin to Trump?
I'm sorry? Yeah. Yeah. He. Yes. If you go to his site, you'll see that he compared Stalin to Trump. He said when he attacks the media and calls them fake, that he is speaking like Stalin. How crazy is that?
Well, Karl's been off the rails for quite a while, so I'm not too surprised, Bobby. I worked with him directly when I was in D.C., and he's compromised himself a lot. I think he probably, maybe at one time, was a really good guy. I know political consultants who worked back with him in Texas when he was young, and he certainly was smart. But like so many people that go to D.C., they become corrupt with the money and power, and I think that has happened to Carl. I would say that to his face. So, Bobby, thanks. Interesting. Let's go to James in Tennessee. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
So what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is this whole thing with McCain
I don't want to go into all the stuff about McCain. But what I will say is I feel like that this silence about that side of things is a symptom. And if we don't get a handle on that and deal with that, nothing is going to get resolved as far as the establishment, et cetera. It's just not.
So, James, what are you indicating? What do you think's going on? Can you express that in words?
I think he's John the Manchurian Candidate McCain. And I think that a whole bunch of people were covering for him. If it was just Democrats, it'd be one thing, but there's way too many establishment Republicans that have covered up this man's record. He should have been on trial. You know, being a silver spoon and the son and the grandson of an admiral shouldn't cut any ice, but it does.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was working for a way bigger agenda. And that agenda continues on. And it, like I said, it's not going to get cleaned up until we, you know, it's like an alcoholic coming to terms. We've got to come to terms with that whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, James, it's an interesting observation. And the one counter to that, I guess I am not convinced that John McCain was purposefully a Manchurian candidate. You heard me maybe say yesterday that I think he was just a very confused person, and he did a lot of wicked things. He did. I'm talking about policy things. He really made a mess of things and interjected himself in ways that were so harmful to this country and dangerous, and yet all the while claiming his strong patriotism and how he loved the country, which I don't doubt. I think he really believed that about himself. I think he was just a really messed up guy who grew up and was allowed to get away with his messed upness because of his, you're right, he came from a famous family and he was given a pass. I mean, he went to the academy and he came in, I think, the fourth from the bottom of his class. When they talk about him being a hero, I think he was the one who caused the crash of that, I think it's the Forrestal airplane, which landed on a cruiser. I think it was John McCain who caused that crash, but nobody ever talks about that. He's got a really not a very good record. And yet it is pretty disturbing to hear people change the narrative. I don't think they have to come out and say what I'm saying, but neither do they have to go overboard and paint him as something that I don't believe he was. They could say honest things about him without attributing. The next generation is not going to really know who he is because we're not allowed to say what we know about his past. So anyway, James, very interesting again. Let me get Barry in from Alabama. Good morning, Barry.
Hey, dittos to you, Sandy. Thanks. God bless you. Quick comment. I want to affirm and agree with everything you've said concerning McCain's run for presidency, which was just a fiasco, and he never intended to win. Sarah Palin carried that. God bless her. But then I'd like to just pass on, for what it's worth, your listeners to pray for Alabama's November election. We do have the Ten Commandment Amendment on our ballot, which is a great amendment. And I'll just leave you with that. But again, just not degrading the man in any ways, but let's tell the truth. And I appreciate the way and the candor you do. So God bless you. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks a lot, Barry. That's a nice compliment. Trying to speak the truth gets me in trouble sometimes, but I just think that makes us free. Didn't Jesus say that? He is the way, the truth, and the life. He's the God of all truth, and that doesn't mean everything in your mind should be spilled. But there are things that you need to say, things that need to be said, and it takes a lot of courage in this day and time to do that. Now, I'm not talking about myself. I've had to summon courage to speak the truth. It's not hard to do that with you all on the air. You want truth, too. But at some point, there will be a price to pay for all of us. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.